Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, 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 oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of the show, recognize they are in a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter. For sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint with Late Night Poets, which is part of allpoetry.com. Now, on All Poetry, you don't have to be in the group Late Night Poets to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because if you're in the group, you can follow along in the chat with us, read the poems along with us, and just have the full experience. So with me, I have Babbler and Randy. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. Babbler, I hope you had a better week than last week. How's it going?
Yes, I did, thankfully. It would have been really bad if it wasn't. Busy, but not nearly as hellish. So, yes, much better than last week.
Good. If you missed last week, Babbler had a literally shitty week. It was just disaster after disaster. So I'm so happy that, you know, no explosions this time. Yay.
Explosion free. All right.
Excellent. No bathroom explosion. So tonight we're going to go over poems from two different contests. And since Randy is with us, I'm going to start with the one that he is in, which is Jump Rope. So it's based on the quote, "There's this fine line between gentle and badass, goddess and warrior, good witch and bitch, empathy and boundaries, madness and creative magic. I personally like to use that line as a jump rope. Keeps life interesting." Which is by Brooke Hampton. And I'm not actually familiar with Brooke Hampton. I just came across this quote and I liked it. And it just happens that, you know, Brooke is also Babbler's name, so somehow it just felt like, oh, this is just right. It's not you, is it, Babbler?
No. Though my last name does also start with an H.
Oh,
no.
So easily mistaken. There was another contest where there was this poet, Alpha, that I took quotes from, and people often take my username and somehow make it have an L in it. People thought it was me who wrote those quotes, and I'm like, no, I do not take credit for any of the things. So that was our prompt, and, you know, as always, people go in all different directions for the prompt, which is exciting. I like to see the variety of responses that it gets, and I'm just going to load that up because we share the links in the chat while we go. So, Randy, would you like to go first?
I would. Thank you very much.
All right. I put the link up to your poem whenever you're ready.
All right. The title is Blurred Lines. I'm extremely flexible as I straddle life's borders, accepting its suggestions, what some call orders, blurring the lines between what's right and wrong, proving I was born to be wild, my favorite song, constantly zigging when most others would zag. Even lacking basic humility, I'd much rather brag. Ignoring norms by quietly following the crowd, I prefer the crowd to me, being obnoxiously loud. The line that should not be crossed, I find a joke, and play with it like a child who's jumping a rope. Left and right, back and forth, my game, my rules, always doing just as I please, I'm nobody's fool. If you think I'm a rebel, you have read this right. I'm as different from most as day is from night. Intelligent people likely form some kind of plan. In the end, I don't know where I'm going to land. End poem.
Great read, Randy. I like what you did here with the tie-in of the actual jump rope and the making it a game. You know, you set the setting for your piece by kind of seeing a picture of the narrator which here, with being a bit rebellious, you know, born to be wild, your favorite song, you know, constantly zigging when most others would zag, you know, going against the grain, lacking humility, you know, being a loud kind of noisy braggart, and then finding those jokes that certainly exist, that they ride that line of what is acceptable and what isn't, you know, and to admit like carelessness with it, you know, to just take it and play it like a game, you know. I think it does a good job of conveying that sometimes those lines get crossed in good humor, even if it's, there's no lack of planning or foresight. You know what I mean? Like, there's no ill intent, but there is perhaps like a bit of blind ignorance. I don't know. I enjoyed it. It made it playful, and game like to kind of play with the idea of, you know, when lines get crossed. You know, when does something go from being confidence to conceit? You know. I liked it. I thought it was very well done. You had a very tight rhyme scheme. You know, I think you managed to make this feel like a pretty full and fleshed out piece, despite only being 144 words and 4 stanzas. So you did an excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I like how you used the jump rope in there too, left and right, back and forth. Like you incorporated it. In there, and worked really great. I like this kind of attitude of not needing to fit in. I also like the song "Born to Be Wild." Where is it? I had a spot I wanted to point out. At the end when it's talking about intelligent people likely have a plan. I don't know about that. I mean, like, brilliant people are often odd. like, think of, like, Einstein was kind of, like, a strange, didn't-follow-the-rules kind of guy, too. I think sometimes that the most brilliant don't need to plan the way that many of us do. If I don't plan, then I am a mess. But some people can just kind of go with it, and they have that flow. I thought this was really fun. It had it captured the prompt very well. Babbler, when you said 144 words, I'm like, did you literally count that, like, as he read? Like, how did you know that? But then it says it at the bottom. I was, like, amazed. I'm like, you're Rain Manning me right now. How did you do that, Babbler? But no. I see. You cheated. excellent poem, Randy. Further. Thank you for sharing it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's see what we have next. Why don't we do Babblers? Babbler, I'm going to put you up.
All righty.
Okay.
This is flavor. Like little bits of garlic in the food, teasing your tongue to find the little barb of flavor. I dump the whole braid in at once, choke on the flavor of communication. This is garlic. There was no invitation, but the aroma drew you in. Cloying smell of butter, slippery pasta rising up into a smile. Your bottom settles into a vacant chair, ever present at my table. Is there a groove forming, scooping around your backside, or a stiff board carving right angles from your thighs? My eyes lock on as the forkful meets your lips, probing for a reaction. Do you like it? It is not shy. Layers of basil, garlic, butter, lemon soak in, blunt and savory. Hot chilies diced, splashed over the top, a hint of wine at the edges. Stinging the corners of the palate. You are welcome back anytime. The menu has not changed, but I understand if you do not return. This is garlic. End poem.
Ooh, I really like this metaphor, and you know, that boldness of you know, you're not mixed in with everything. You are there and noticeable and blunt. I really liked the way you, where is the blunt part? There's, I totally lost my spot. Okay. Layers of the basil, garlic, butter, and lemon soak in blunt and savory. I feel like that's you. Like, I can see it in your writing and in your comments sometimes that, like, you tell it how it is, and that's what I love about you. I love how direct you are, and I feel like you get that through talking about food. And as you probably noticed, because I'm chubby, that food is a thing that I enjoy quite a bit. So I really like the choices of food that you put in here, and I like the challenge that you give the reader of, like, you're welcome back anytime. I know you might not come back, and this is how it is. It's like, I'm not going to change it to be palatable to you. This is who I am, and, you know, you're welcome to experience me or not. But it's not in, like, necessarily an aggressive way. It's just sort of like, this is how it is. And I like the way that you're probing for a reaction, like, as the forkful meets your lip. So it's like, I can just imagine you, like, saying something to someone and watching them, like, process what you said. Yeah. It's really good. Randy, what did you think of the poem?
Yes, I thought it was an excellent poem, a great read. And I also, excuse me, I also enjoyed the metaphors. I saw it as taking food and having it as a metaphor for yourself, putting it in place. So you offer yourself just like you're offering food. And like Apasiana mentioned, I like the part where you mentioned the different layers of basil, garlic, butter, lemon, those being the different layers of your personality, the hot chili, representing the fact that you can be rather spicy. And this may or may not appeal to everyone. It may sting the corners of the palate, and that everyone's welcome back. Whether they return or not, it's up to them. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really nice poem.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the comment.
Our next poem is by Blue Leader One. It's called Sugar, Honey, Coffee. My good is eclipsed by my darkness. Does it mean I'm evil? I just have dark moods, dark friends in dark hours. I yearn for the light. Just sometimes it's too bright. Sometimes it's too right. Sometimes I want to fight dirty. I mean, really low down and filthy. But then I want to be pure, like water through a crystal, so I can see some lovely bristles. Yeah, I'm a pistol. I'm sweet and neat. I smell like peat, complete. When I'm with you, I want to be everything that's right. When you're out of sight, well, I'm only human. And Paul.
Great read, Apasiana. I enjoy the different aspects of the personality. You know, like saying, hey, I'm a good person, but I look bad. You know, these are some of my flaws. You know, I have bad moods. The company I keep is maybe a little questionable. You know, and I seem to prefer that kind of seedy surrounding. You know, the light and bright, despite wanting to yearn for it, isn't really, you know, the type of person that the narrator is. I was kind of fascinated by the little stanza near the end there, the I'm sweet and neat. I smell like peat, complete. You know, because sweet and neat, I think of something like sugary and cute and tidy, but then I smell like peat, like that's dirt. You know? literal dirt. And so I'm thinking, you know, I look sweet and neat. I almost imagine it like a dawning of personas, you know. When I'm around this particular person, I look innocent and put together and like I have my shit going. But if you're really paying attention, you can still smell the dirt, you know, because that's complete. Like that's the entire aspect of my personality. You know, even if I can come across as neat and tidy and sweet and innocent, you know, that's a surface layer that I don in certain situations. You know, when I'm with you, I want to be everything that's right. So the goal is to be a better person around this particular person, you know, more perfect, you know, as whatever definition of more perfect is, really. You know, but when they're not around, they fall back on old habits, you know, only human. So I really particularly liked that little short stanza there in the middle, because it's like, you know, a facade. I feel everybody has personas, you know, whether they mean it or not, whether you're faking it and trying to appear better than you are or not. I just, who you're talking to has a lot to do with what you say and how you say it. You know, how I'll talk to my friends is not how I'm going to talk to my grandmother, and it's certainly not how I'm going to talk to my boss. Are any of those fake? No. No, it's just appropriateness. You know? It's knowing societal norms, you know. And in this situation, it seems like there's a romantic interest here that they want to appear sweet and innocent and good enough in a weird definition thereof. But they can't really, you know, completely obliterate, like, the fact that they're maybe not so sweet and innocent. Likes a bit more of the CD personality and company. So I enjoyed the piece. I felt like it had a great voice and a good attitude and some creative rhyming. It didn't seem to have a particular scheme as much as it was more about the flow of it, which I enjoy because I write a lot that way. I don't focus too much on having, like, a pattern to my rhyming as much as it is about how does it feel when I'm saying it. So I appreciate that. I was also intrigued by the misspelling of the word evil in the second line. You know, evil tends to not be one that you accidentally typo much. So I wonder if there's a secondary meaning to that or a purpose to that particular spelling. Because it doesn't look like, you know, there's a whole lot of other misspellings or anything like that that would lead me to think that this person's grammar would dismiss that. So it makes me think that there's a purpose behind it, even if I don't totally understand what that is. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great write from Blue Leader 1. Rick, what are your thoughts?
I'm sorry, who did you call on?
Rich.
I think you mean Randy. But actually,
Randy.
He has...
You're right. Randy
called on me. No, it's okay. I was like, is there like... someone here who I don't know?
No, just me pulling the wrong name out of the hat. Sorry, Randy.
Okay. He dropped, so thank you for calling in, Randy. That's okay that you had to go. It was lovely having you here. Hopefully we'll call again another time. Okay, so I'm going to get back
to
that poem. I really liked it. It did have a wonderful flow to it. It felt so easy to read. To read it out loud, it just was a natural kind of flow. You know, sometimes if it's someone else who wrote it, you're not quite sure, like, how to say it, where this one just felt natural to me. And it had this kind of spunky attitude to it. I don't know. I liked it. It's just like, yeah, I'm a pistol. I liked the way some lines are short and some are long. There's certain kinds of poems where that works well, and I think that in this one it did. Having just as an individual word for a line makes you think that there's a pause there. It changes things. So it almost feels like it's like meant to be read out loud. The evil part that you pointed out, Babbler, I thought maybe it was because like U tends to be a longer sound, so like evil. It's almost like playful rather than like evil. Like the actual spelling, it's just more serious. I don't know. I could be totally wrong there. I felt a little silly because I actually don't know the Bristols, what that is referring to, and I feel like I should. See some lovely Bristols. Are you familiar, Babbler?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I didn't realize I was on mute. Just being weird today, for me, I guess I thought I didn't totally know, but I assumed maybe that they're British, and it's a British reference, because I know it's a place in Britain. Bristol. And so I don't know if there's a, you know, a certain attitude or subculture that's associated with the area or not. So
that would make sense.
That's okay. Kind of what I had thought maybe.
I think that would make perfect sense. Okay. I'm just not up on the British lingo.
I mean, not yeah. really either. That's just what I had thought maybe that meant.
You sold me on it. I really liked it. I think it has a conversational tone that works well for the subject matter. I am now loading.
Oh, I looked it up while we were talking about it. It's British slang for a woman's breast. Boobs.
Oh, gonna go see some lovely Bristol. I see how it is. That takes on a whole new meaning. All right. I like it.
That's what that is.
So maybe it's like going to the strip club kind of thing. Mm-hmm. All right. Changes the context of that line, but I like it. I love how wrong we are. We're like, it's a fancy thing. I mean, not that the breasts aren't fancy.
Fancy. But yeah, I figured gritty. Like, you know what I mean? Like a seedy part of town or something, which,
yes.
I mean, kind of, but it's boobs. In this case.
That's awesome. I'm glad you looked it up. for our next poem, we are lucky that we have an audio. So this audio is by Valentina Holloway, and the poem is called Acuta Conscientia.
Acuta Conscientia. Indifference. Or were you just caught and abandonment your go-to? Well, I was knee-deep, engaged with them whether I wanted it or not, and I didn't want the bombardment. I guess I forgot a spark resided inside me until it was lit. This glimmer of an arcane warrior strung bone-deep inside my body, smoldering in my chest where I craved tranquility. Vulnerable, tucked deep in the soft. Indomitable, raging battle, not quite fathoming the carnage. Their visual bombing was so ferocious. But I see your merciless pattern. And I don't care. Bury your past. Only future actions matter. Talk to me in a perfect, precise coalescence of truth. No need to hide. I only have a hunger for your honesty. I fought for what felt like centuries, towers and civilizations forged around numbness. Yet I remain here, steadfast, analytically regarding with apprehension transparent motives. Gift me your trust. I will reciprocate. A fire burns inside me. I flee towards you. My strength isn't a burden. It matches your own. I sift through the ashes consuming you. There is no need to navigate the path alone. Cease viewing my strength as your weakness. Generations howl inside me, gravitate into my orbit. I'll fuel your adrenaline rush.
Excellent, SoundCloud. I love it when people submit SoundClouds to us, not because I don't enjoy reading poems, because I do, but because it's so much more, I don't know, it feels more fleshed out when it's read in the author's voice, and you get to hear it how they meant it to be heard. So thank you very much, Valentina Holloway, for submitting a SoundCloud with this. It was greatly appreciated. I enjoyed this piece. There was a lot of passion with it. There's something about it that felt almost classic, or, you know, it almost felt like some Grecian goddess saving someone from self-destruction in a very literal sense, you know? I loved it. I pictured almost like Greek statues in a way. And I'm not exactly sure that's what came to mind, but that's what visuals I got from it. I think it was, you know, some of the word choices in here, you know, like bombardment and arcane warrior strung bone deep inside my body. I loved the word choices in here. There were some really great lines, you know, indomitable raging battle, not quite fathoming the carnage. You know, just impervious to the war, like to having this really steadfast and stalwart, like focus on the end goal. Like there's a mission here, you know, and the mission is saving somebody from themselves, you know, from their own demons, from past mistakes. I was a little bit waffly when we got to the line. Oh gosh, where is it? The past doesn't matter. Only future actions matter. And I don't care. Bury your past. Only future actions matter. Talk to me in a perfect, precise coalescence of truth. No need to hide. I only have a hunger for your honesty. And while I love the sentiment of this, you know, like of let go of all of the mistakes that you made, like you don't want them to continue to bury you. Part of my mind goes to like abuse, you know, and that's fine as long as none of that past was aimed at you. And all of a sudden I couldn't help but having like this emotional response to the narrator going, whoa, 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 don't light yourself on fire, you know. You can change in the future, but past actions, you know, can be indicative of future actions. You know, you can't just say, oh, well, he hit me, but he'll never hit me again. Like that, you know, like don't take everything as truth, especially when a history of lying is present, you know. And it was interesting because that's just where my mind went. And I know that that's not the intent of the piece. It's just from there on in the poem, while listening, I had this like balancing act going on in my own mind of like, yes, save this person, be there when no one else has been there. You know, it even says that when everyone else has abandoned you, you know, and it's like this battle in my head going, yeah, save them, be there for them, be supportive for them, help them navigate this. And the other part of me is like, don't light yourself on fire for some person who's made their bed now and doesn't want to lay in it and is going to abuse the hell out of you because you're so overcommitted to, you know, fighting their battle for them, you know. Anyway, which is more of a narrative in my own head than the actual piece. It was just interesting because there was suddenly just such a dichotomy within me while reading the write. But I still really loved it. It felt very epic in the writing style, and such a great pleading voice, and yet it sounded so strong, you know, like some kind of goddess, you know, of strength. So I really liked it. I thought it was beautifully done. I really appreciated your read. Fantastic write. Thank you, Valentina. Your thoughts, Ephesiana?
I think I took it really differently from you. I mean, I love everything you said, and I agree with what you said, but I kind of saw it as she's almost like a dominatrix, and they have, because there's one part where she talks about my strength isn't a burden, it matches your own, and I sift through the ashes consuming you. For me, it was like she is the dominant partner, and that she wants her partner to know. Does it actually say that it's male? No, I don't think he does. I was going to say he, but I shouldn't assume he. So she wants her partner to know that she can also be gentle. Like, she cares about this person. She has that kind of, like, emotional connection, willing to be there, even though she's also, like, definitely, like, the fiery one. And in kind of, like, being ferocious, she is opening up the person to be more vulnerable, and yet she will take care. I don't know, I'm kind of going in a circle here, but it reminds me of something that someone wrote for Victoria's show, The Black Lace Diaries, and then there was this big discussion afterwards about how there's aftercare in kind of kinky stuff where the dom becomes the caretaker afterwards, and it's not my world, so I really can't comment on it, but I don't know, that this just reminded me a lot of that. It may not be where she was going, but it just is very, like, strong woman who is expecting trust, but will also give that trust. And I don't know, I thought it was interesting and really well done. And Babbler, I agree with the thing that you said about the abuse. I don't think that's what this is about, but it's true. You know, you can't just, like, forget the past completely. You know, there's times that you can forgive, and there's things that you take care of them and you help them rehabilitate. But at the same time, like, you can't just, like, say it never mattered, and then, like you said, there's patterns of, you know, be prepared not to take any more shit. Yeah, I liked what you said. I kind of went off in a different direction in my mind.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I viewed it in a romantic relationship setting, but I didn't view it in, like, a distinctly sexual setting. You know, I definitely think there were, like, some nods to sexuality in here, but I didn't take it so, like, directly sexual. I mean, I can see that for sure. But I guess that's just not exactly where my mind goes. So, interesting. Different take.
I jump the rope into a dirty mind sometimes. It's been too long since there's been a Black Lace Diaries show. So, you know, I haven't got that outlet.
I feel like I've been really lacking on writing and participating in general. I've just been so busy. And then I'm just like, oh, my God, like, I have not done anything in so long. I'm like, I want to be doing stuff. I'm tired.
Yes, I've been judging contests and tournaments and stuff, but I haven't been, you know, being the creative person. So we need to make it our goal for next week. Well, you did write for this week. I haven't. So next week I'm writing something.
Sounds good.
Okay. Our next poem is by Brundaba Panda. Would you please read that, Babbler?
Absolutely. This is Push Pull Provision Provide Successful Position by Brundaban Panda. Feels like this. Pull of supreme soul, possible from heart, positively within the heart sits omniscient. Person's personality means life, soul, or self. Place of life, soul is mind, with motherly help. Push goes from mind side, pull from the Lord. Push pull very vital as a double-edged sword, particularly by jump rose effect back to front, positively sporting effect favors achievement. Preference goes for the keep life interesting. Pleasure to apply jump rope action inspiring. Positive, negative, two opposite natures fight. Person gets pleasure loving neutrality. Person become own foe or friend by nature. Pain in negative nature, positive for pleasure. Possible everything for positive mind person. Person of negative mind, impossible version. End poem. This was interesting. You know, there's so much alliteration going on. Like, I feel like half of the poem is written with P word. you know, which makes it really interesting to say, because P is such a distinct consonant in your mouth. It makes it very poppy feeling, which is, I mean, it's just an interesting texture for the piece. You know, and then to read about it, you know, I definitely think there are some religious tones to this, you know, with reference to the Lord and Supreme Soul being capitalized and even omniscient. You know, there's definitely religious pieces throughout this, specifically Christian, you know, a subtext here. But the, you know, the battle between positive and negative is almost a stand-in for, like, good and evil, you know, for right and wrong, to, you know, to choose the right things. You know, it's as vital as a double-edged sword, like both sides will cut, you know, being overly good and overly positive, you know, particularly positive, will come across as grating. if you've ever met those overly positive people, that's just like, oh my god. same for overly negative. You know, it's really kind of a balance that you're looking for. You know, person gets peace, pleasure, loving, neutrality. Person become own friend or foe by nature. So there's just kind of a, you know, finding the balance. And then, you know, with the lean here, I think towards the positive in general. You know, there's a balance, but you want to end up on one side. So, you know, possible everything for positive mind person. So the person who thinks positively about everything can accomplish more, whereas the person who's negative doesn't think that they can do everything. I will say that, you know, it does feel a bit constrained by this dedication to the alliteration. I think it stomps a little bit on the message. But I still think it's really well done, and it does give a really interesting texture, and it, I think, supports, you know, really hammering home the idea of positive. Positive, 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 because you're saying so many P's, it does drown out the negative. So maybe that's part of the purpose for all of the P's. Anyway, really interesting, right? I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun to read. For sure. Athesiana, your thoughts?
I did find the alliteration a little bit overwhelming. I like alliteration, but like you said, it's like half of the words are P, and that kind of made me think of in Bugs Bunny, Sylvester the cat, whenever he says P, it's like, and just imagining spitting all over the place. So I found that a little distracting just because I was picturing Sylvester, because I'm crazy like that. I think my favorite line was push-pull, very vital as double-edged sword. So the idea of, you know, a push and pull, the back and forth, is vital to finding that balance, you know, you, 'cause like you said, you know, the overly positive becomes like toxic positivity. You don't let anything, anyone feel their real feelings. And also it's like annoying. I have one coworker who, she means well, and she's so positive, but I just can't handle her in the morning, 'cause it's just like, okay, yeah. It's a bit too much enthusiasm just now. And then there's also, you know, the storminess of a negative person that kind of like brings everything down. Yeah, finding that balance. So I liked the push-pull recognition, which is also in the title. So that's definitely something that he was focused on. And the double-edged sword is a good metaphor. Kind of a classic one. Yeah, so it gets its message across. Thank you for sharing, Brenda Ban.
Yes, much appreciated. Thank you. Where are we off to now? Oh,
There's one by Steve Kane that I'm going to share, and it's called Double Dutch. Double Dutch, yin and yang, jump the rope, doppelgang, inside out, right way round, loner or part of the crowd, two-faced, then most sincere, psychopath or saint, double Dutch, jib and jibe, backtrack, fast track, walk the line, tell a lie, apple pie, let's do or die, fight a war, let it ride, walk away or make it right, jump the line, stay behind, schizophrenic in two minds, simultaneously hermaphrodite, the coin, it has two sides, push me, pull you any way, do little or may it pay. End poem.
Well, I think in this one, it's particularly the rhythm of it is key to the piece. It's called double Dutch, which is a very particular type of jump rope, where you have two jump ropes that are going in opposite directions of each other. And a lot of times, to go with the double Dutch, much like this, they go with the rhythm of the rope to help you jump it. You know, so double Dutch, yin and yang, jump the rope, double gang, you know, because that's how it's that beat. Which I think works itself really well into this right. So you almost hear it as a jump rope song. Like, as, I don't know what the term is for those songs. Like, they're literally just like schoolyard jump rope songs, you know, Cinderella, Dressed in Yelly, you know, like, I know a bunch of them from when I was in elementary school, but I don't know that they have an actual name. But I think it fits the rhythm of that really well. And then I find it fascinating how it applies to the personality and writing that line. You know, even from the beginning, you know, yin and yang, doppelgang. You know, they look like each other, but they're different, like a doppelganger. You know, two-faced and most sincere, psychopath or saint. You know, just kind of the opposites, playing with the opposites. And then that last stanza gets really complex, you know, jump the line, stay behind, schizophrenic into minds, simultaneous hermaphrodite, you know, where this, now things are merging, they're not quite so separate. You know, it's almost like the rhythm of the jump rope game sped up so fast that you're about to trip. Because schizophrenic, there might be a split there, but it's still in one person, and hermaphrodite, you know, that's the same thing. That's two things at the same time, you know, a coin, one coin, you know, so that I think it starts to blur, like opposites aren't so opposite, you know, that it's not black and white. There's a whole spectrum of things. And I think that's kind of neat. I wish it had been explored just a little more because, you know, it applies to so many things, especially now, you know. Things that come to mind are things like autism or gender or sexuality or, you know, there's so many things that I think we're getting more and more comfortable with society as seeing as a spectrum and not this and that, this or that, this or that. And to realize that it's really more of a, you know, a blended situation than it is a either or. So I really liked it. I thought it was well done. I loved the rhythm of it and how it fits that kind of childhood jump rope song that pulls in the quote really well, while also really exploring that line, where do you draw the line, and it gets more and more blurred. So I enjoyed this piece. I thought rhythmically it was very successful. So thank you, Steve. Your thoughts, Susanna?
Oh, I really like everything that you had to say. There's the one thing I don't love in it is, it's kind of a pet peeve of mine, the misunderstanding of schizophrenia, schizophrenic in two minds. So multiple personalities and schizophrenia are different.
Yeah.
So that part bugs me just because I have dissociative identity disorder, so I know about that stuff, and I'm just like, no, that's like the myth is wrong. So that part bothers me, but that's not about the poem itself. That's just my own personal vendetta. So the poem itself is really amazing. I love the part that you pointed out, the fact that it's like the skipping songs. It really is. And I don't think there is a special name for skipping songs, but I know exactly what you mean. We used to do one that was like, Queen Bee was chasing me and I caught you. Or like, I don't know, like, you take turns who's in the thing. Now I really want to like learn more skipping songs and start skipping again. All right. This is giving me a throwback. I thought it was great how it used that rhythm to talk about, like, it's, you know, it's serious subject matter, but it also was done in a really fun way. And I feel like he needs to make, like, a video to this where he's skipping while reading it. That would be awesome. I really liked it. I like the word choices. And the way that he makes it like, about that line and going back and forth, it's really well put together. So other than my one little pet peeve of misunderstanding schizophrenia, loved it.
Great comment. I'm thinking of like all of the ones that I know, and the one that always comes to my mind for the skipping songs is the stupid Cinderella one. You know, Cinderella dressed in yelly, turn around to kiss her felly, take and kiss the snake. How many doctors did it take? And then you just count. And that's what I remember. anyway.
I can think, I'm like lost in Miss Mary Mac. Miss Mary Mac, all dressed in black. But then there's a whole bunch of things where it's like, it's almost like innuendo, but then it switches the thing. It's like, I can't even think of it right now, but there's a whole bunch of things where it's like, you almost say, like, you know that the rhyme is going to be ass, but then it changes. Like, it's like. There's a whole bunch of times where you, like, just get away with not saying it. And we used to love that when we were kids because it was like you were being bad but not really being bad because you didn't actually say it.
Yeah.
That was bothering me. I don't remember the words.
I can hear the rhythm in my head, but I don't remember the words now. But I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, just the last minute it would say something else. But you know what the rhyme should have been.
Mm-hmm. She broke her big fat. Ask me no more questions. Please tell me no more lies. The boys and girls are kissing. And
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I need to like dedicate a day to looking at skipping songs. All right, this is my life now. our next poem is by Peter Solway. Would you read that for me, please, Babbler?
Absolutely. Is This and That by Peter Solway. Chipped tooth of childhood, deaf lad still learning to talk, let alone sing. Moan at mum each morning, school don't want, make us sit down. Lean alphabet, deaf lad homestay with rabbit pet. Plump mama explaining, gotta get you some learning. Can't be a little deaf Beethoven. Play bunny with chases, full follow, lost get, squeeze first head. Nonsense, my deaf composer. Little mumbling Stevie Wonder. School of loud bullies. Watching their mouths go up and down, chip tooth hurting. No rest with play bunny. Big ears and naughty, all a shit of crock. What your fat mummy make for little what? Pickled lunch. Sometimes good at art. Mama saying, I can see this and that. Bag in mouth unlit, looking forward to ignition. Her deaf son, now famous as Rembrandt. Seller of fine wines, rehab and health care for years to come. What a handsome son. Deep inhalations in a world of this and that, God's lost for a reason to listen. Prayers of no reply, silence, mum in the hereafter prison, wing stitching tartan. Clan of clams, thinking what the use, hop and skip, crack of light quick. Done family shit, saga of deaf sailor to silence an ancient mariner. emigrate to associate professor, robot man with published equations, make proud golden dead mum. John, Newton, Olivia, Ovaltine, diagnosis latest, deaf autist off the spectrum. A dyke not from Holland, Australian as Alaskans, rabbit willing, tunnel entering, meeting eventual the temper bad queen, stoop thing saying, circumcision repeating. Oh, deaf retiree, pension free, remembering memories, plucked nipples. Mama in the chamber of execution, only deaf child looking on, saying little broken tooth, be strong. Then the light went on. Mama turned to lightning, fried bacon, full grammar thought defined. Up there with the sculptured ones, Lincoln, Jefferson, sitting bull, fool drunk. Song of an afternoon buck, followed detective deaf. What? At every intersection. Vikings honor defend, rape Celtic virgins, better than a stanzaed afternoon. In a transit zone of speculating, oh prattle of Peter now on computer, mother would be proud of ya. Deaf to virgin screams no longer, her proud ski instructor, no serial killer, child molester. A star with Madonna, gold leaf Greek, always regressing back. But revolutions of this and that, art born of past mistakes, gone like foreskin. Clear the track ahead. Hop, skip, and jump. Win a bridge. Coffin of lined conclusions. White peaks in the distance, climbing Himalayan. Over contested mountains, Chinese, Tibetan, Mexican, deaf to all creation. Eardrums exploding, sonnets to mother's sacred, out of fashion. All complicated geometry, the deaf lad had to learn, gun in mall and tenure. Swish sojourns, lake chillin', fans with potions brewing, grammatical healing, dreams better, speaking English proper to camera, love of Sherpa, night of chillstorm. Death is death on sharp slopes, nuclear power stations, Hiroshima mushrooms, all creation natural, my reciting mum no more, dentures too. Porters with heavy packs. Ascending, descending, slopes of this and that, deaf stars to sing, look, Blake in orbit, satellite Celtic, God's generic, disputing takes of this and that, deaf lad still in kindergarten, plagued by the teacher's rules, listen, overhead, the silent silver planes. End poem. Well, this is a really complicated piece, and it's long, so it's a little bit hard for me to dissect, especially from a Peter Wright, since they tend to be so referential and complex. But I will do my best on giving the pieces that I kind of picked apart while reading. To me, it seems about growing up. And all of the different expectations and different ways of being deaf and different ways of creating art and different definitions of education and right and wrong. Where is that line between right and wrong and good and evil? And how does, a child navigate it? So we've got a little kid, the chipped tooth of childhood, so already there's damage, there's traumatic childhood, deaf lad still learning to talk, let alone sing, can't hear properly. So you're not going to learn to talk at the same speed, at the same rate, to be coddled by a mother, and you don't want to go to school, and you don't want to experience these things, but then you're told to go anyway. And you go, and you get bullied, school of loud bullies, watching their mouths go up and down, chipped tooth hurting. This is kind of a side note, but when I was in the summer between 6th grade and 7th grade, I got hit in the face with a bag of nickels, and it busted my front tooth in half. I had no money as a kid, so I went all through middle school and high school, like half a front tooth. So when I read, like, chipped tooth and that it's hurting, I can feel that throb rather viscerally because I literally had half a tooth between the ages of 12 and 19. You know, to feel the pain, basically the repeated trauma of earlier, you know, to have like an old wound be prodded at, you know, and yet your mom is telling you you're doing great. You know, you can't just be a deaf little Beethoven. Like, you need to go to school and you need to learn, but, you know, you're a little mumbling Stevie Wonder. Like, you can be all these great things. You can achieve all of these great things, but you're still having to deal with the day-to-day, like, bullshit. Which in the long term doesn't matter, but in the short term always feels massive, you know, and being forced to grow up. So the use of bunny, right, throughout this piece kind of evolved, you know, with rabbit pet, you know, so it's just this little pet rabbit when it starts, and then it turns into a play bunny as it gets older. And then it's play bunny, where it's like both capitalized and hyphenated. I think that's indicating like maturity and puberty, and it's, you know, kind of turning into like the Playboy bunny. I think there's the reference to that, like how something innocent and childlike is becoming more sexual. You know, and then, you know, the mom saying you're good at art and mom saying you're good at all of these things, but no one else really reiterating those things, you know, and turning to smoking and changing things. You know, I don't catch all of these references, but, you know, it sounds like, you know, living a rough life, you know, of deafness, but still hearing a lot of other things. You know, lots of references to different places. And yet also this under current of, like, what is it to be educated? You know, to know and understand and get all these references, all these artists and writers and, you know, a Dyke not from Holland and John and Newton and Olivia and even the Sellers, you know, and the Afternoon of Buke, you know, that being Bukowski. Like, there's so many wrapped in here, and yet even, you know, Lincoln and Jefferson are in here. Are misspelled, you know, which to me seems like a nod to, like, that lack of literacy. Like, what is it to be educated? What is it to understand? You've got this and you've got that, and they don't always line up. And you get to the end and it's like deaf lad still in kindergarten, plagued by the teacher rules, listen, overhead, the silent silver plane. So it's like a war zone. There's like a war going on, and they're sitting in a classroom, you know, learning what the teachers think is important. Well, how important is it? How important is it to sit in a classroom and listen to what the teachers have to tell you? Or are other kinds of education for certain people more valuable and more valid? You know, is it worth it to sit in a classroom and have someone talk at you when you can't hear about things in a book? Or is it maybe more worthwhile to find other ways of learning and other topics that maybe are more pressing? Just, I think that's kind of what it's getting at. So I can pick it apart more, but it's kind of long and there's a lot going on. So I really enjoyed it, though. It's very complex and very interesting, and then I'll enjoy picking it apart more later. Your thoughts, Susiana?
I think this is one of my favorites from him. Like, there's so much to this. And I kind of wonder if it's autobiographical because in his other poems, he talks about being an artist. He talks about being a professor. These are all things that are coming up in here. Now, you never know with a poem. It could be just a character. But I definitely see some of him in this. And like you said, so many references. He's always great with the references. and a lot of them in this one are about people with disabilities, Beethoven, Stevie Wonder, and it's like the success beyond what people expect. The mother definitely plays an important role here, and her enthusiastic, wanting him to be successful, worried that being deaf is going to mess that up, but seeing the potential for greatness. I really liked, Art Born of Past Mistakes, because, I mean, it's true, great art often comes from, you know, writing about or painting about or just using the heartbreak and the, you know, learning from your mistakes. So many great novels and poems and all the things are resulting from, you know, poor life choices. Many artists have troubled paths, and in like you were talking about how education might not be what gets him what he needs under his circumstances. Well, maybe the best learning for him was making mistakes in the world. Was odd to me that like circumcision and foreskin came up multiple times. And it talked about getting circumcised again. So I think that is something like feeling like cut off by the way people treat you, like feeling cut off in the worst possible way. The bad-tempered queen, definitely some interesting relationship stuff there. And it is interesting how he wrote John Newton Olivia for Olivia Newton-John. And interesting because she just passed away very recently. Mm-hmm. So that maybe was part of why it was on his mind. And then talking about being on the autism spectrum, which was quite the timing because you had just talked about how autism is a spectrum. And then next poem, we have that in here. The part that kind of like baffled me was there's Mama Turns to Lightning. Where is this? It's such a long poem, I can't find my spot. There was something where like she became the storm. It was really interesting. It was like, you know, she maybe in her death, because it talks about that she's gone, created kind of a something that was like a crisis for him. I'm not sure. There was so much in this. Like you said, it's going to be like a big thing to unpack it all. There's a lot of feeling in it, and so many great references. So thank you, Peter, for writing this. I thought it was amazing, and I don't even know what to say. I'm speechless. I say after I rambled on, but I'm incoherent.
I was also fascinated by that, the lines about his mom. It sounded like she was, like, killed in an electric chair, you know, in the chamber of execution. She turned to lightning fried bacon. You know, I'm like, well, that's a really weird way to, you know, I'm like, was she executed in an electric chair? Or like, maybe I'm over reading into that. But I also found that part very interesting. So. Anyway.
So. Yeah, it does sound like that, doesn't it?
I'm like, turns to bacon. I don't know. But it could just be, you know, dying, and it could be just, you know, the light, you know. But fried bacon I thought was interesting, unless she died, like, in a seizure or something. I don't know. It just sounds, I don't know, sounds a little extra brutal, you know. I don't think most people on witnessing someone die would think fried bacon. So I found that very fascinating. Anyway, that line choice. Enjoyed it immensely. A lot going on. I'll give that one another read later. Where are we off to now?
Now we have one by Daniel Deschino, and it's called Orchestration, Fluctuation, a Pulsation, Elation. I am music, nothing less, nothing more. As are all things that vibrate, so then are all things. And the conductor's baton for the symphony that is me cuts through my life, as chaotic rhythm of swirls and slashes, tempo changes and whimsical sustain. The conductor, a mystery, a flash of invisibility, will-o'-wisps of rainbow wind, as voices and thunderstorms, lion roars and butterfly wings, suitors all line up to the romance, to romance the baton. And I dance to it all, every musical style that explodes in the air. Symphonic orchestra battles with rhythmic electricity, tympanic thunder, beatbox lightning, distortion, rage in collision with new age hammered melodic nirvana. And there is a radiant peace in polished metal, and there is a powerful emotion in harmonic peace, and it is written and it is heard with eyes and mind, every note as the elements unbreakable, pure, every rhythm in a heartbeat is a heartbeat, flower petals opening, stop signs on the road to work, orchestration, my balance in constant fluctuation, as the instrument chooses the musician. End poem.
Well, I found this piece very beautiful, like visually stunning. You know, it was almost like watching fireworks in a poem, you know. I am music. And then to describe the way everything around kind of has music to it, you know, as are all things that vibrate. And that I found particularly interesting from a physics standpoint, because energy basically is vibration. You know, heat is vibration. Atoms and everything else, they vibrate. So literally, all things that vibrate is all things. And that is literally the next line. So then are all things, because literally that is true. You know, things that are frozen and have less energy in them vibrate less, but they don't not vibrate at all. So that I found that very fascinating from a kind of physics perspective, the accuracy of that, and yet still keeping it like emotionally poetic. You know, and then the conductor's baton cuts through my life. You know, I thought it was interesting to view it as like cutting through, you know, like slicing, and viewing the conductor's baton. You know, and it seems almost violent, especially since not knowing who the conductor is. You know, the conductor, a mystery, a flash of invisibility, willow with rainbow wind. Not knowing who the conductor is, you know, because originally I would have thought, oh, the narrator is probably the conductor, but it's not. And so it almost feels like it has a religious subtext to it. Like, who is it that controls everything? You know, who's running the show? Which I found interesting. You know, as voices and thunderstorms, lion roars and butterfly wings, you know, we're getting more into those visuals that almost make this like fireworks. You can really see the motion of all of these things, and this person kind of wildly waving a conductor's wand, slicing through everything and kind of firing up all of nature to create like this musical and visual show, which is why I loved that I liked the term tympanic thunder, because like the banging on an eardrum.
I thought was fascinating as a concept. Beatbox lightning I thought was pretty great too, to kind of blend the sensory experience of this piece was fascinating. And to it is written and it is heard with eyes and mind, but it kind of blurs those things together. You know, obviously if something is, nothing is written with your eyes, it's written with your hand. You know, nothing's heard with your mind. You hear with ears. And so, like, none of those senses match each other. You know, the actions and the, organs of understanding don't line up. You know, you'd think, oh, written with a hand and heard with ears and seen with eyes and thought with the mind. But no, none of them line up, and yet it seems very cohesive. Like, your own mind kind of blends them all in together, and you know what that means, even though it logically doesn't make any sense. Which I think kind of meets the chaotic beauty of this piece in particular. You know, just this wild visual spectation of music and nature all at once, and yet wrapped up all into a single human being. I think this is a really fun piece. It feels very exuberant. You know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was wonderfully written by Daniel. Your thoughts?
Before I comment, I want to welcome Emmy to the show. Hi, Emmy.
Oh, hi. I am actually here. I ducked out early from the Late Night Poets because I just had a lot of interruptions. And so I ended up not being able to get back in. But I am here now. I read this poem. I left a comment on the other one. Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Thank you
for
having me.
You can comment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry. No, it really made me smile. I think when I read the first stanza, I am music, nothing more. I am music, nothing less, nothing more. As are all things that vibrate. So then are all things. I think it was there's this weird philosopher, I think, that I listened to. I don't really remember his name. He wasn't really that famous. But, he was talking about how one side of science seemed to be wrong about something, so the other side started celebrating, and then it turns out they were wrong as well. which is often how things go in science. Two people are arguing and they're both just wrong. But the other thing that I found interesting was how he kind of explained it. It was it's all wigglies, as it turns out. It's all just, you know, stuff vibrating and shit, and that's all I can really confirm. So I really appreciated that just from what I've actually listened to in terms of lectures and stuff. But I think I also really liked Every Rhythm is a Heartbeat. Arrhythmia, for instance, is actually a real medical term for if a heartbeat is not necessarily in order. So really, heartbeat is within rhythm itself. You could say it's the same both ways in this case. But flower petals opening is just a lovely touch. If you read any of my poems, you know that I love art. So those were my thoughts.
Well, great comment. I like what you said.
Sorry,
about
go ahead,
the heartbeat. Thanks. Sorry, we like to talk over each other. I think there's a slight delay, and it seems to happen frequently. But I really like what you said about the heartbeat too. That was a line that I really liked as well. You know, every rhythm is a heartbeat because again, it brought me back to the physics and how, you know, everything that exists has a vibration,
And so to extrapolate that to be like everything is kind of alive, not in the sense of like actually breathing and living necessarily, but like alive with energy, I thought was really fascinating too. So I also liked that line. So I'm glad you pointed that out. Thank you for the comment. Where do you want to take it from here, Pisiana?
Well, I want to comment on it too. I thought it was wonderful. He has such like amazing power to like make me visualize things and hear them at the same time. I have synesthesia, which is where my senses get mixed up. So I really liked the part where you were talking about how the senses are in the wrong place, but that's how I am, so I kind of liked that, and I mean, in a way, it's true, you know, you hear with your brain. I know this because my brain is the problem, not my ears. My ears are just fine, but I sometimes can't process sound, or I process it way too loud, the way that he does this, it's like I can see the sound and hear the colors, and it's just, I don't know, he captures it so well. I also liked the part that you pointed out, Babbler, the tympanic thunder. I thought that was very clever. At first I thought he was the conductor, and then I thought that it must be God. It's beautiful. I loved it.
Yeah, I agree. I guess that's kind of what I was saying with the sensory thing, is that they're mixed up, but yet instantly it's translated. You know what I mean? It's not confusing. It makes sense, and yet it's interesting that it makes sense. So I also really like that one. Excellent comment, Evasiana. Where do you want to take us next?
Let me just grab the link here. So we have one by Dante16. Emmy, are you able to read for us?
Yeah, I was going to, for sure.
Great. So I just posted the one by Dante16, if you're willing to read that.
Okay, yes. All right. Let's go. So this is The Devil's Circus by Dante16. Tumbly-dee, tumbly-doo, tumbly-daw. Hear the circus bells ring. Ladies and gentlemen, let the show begin. And welcome with us here on the stage tonight, a man with no fear and no fright, Dante, the poetic rap puppet, here to fight. Kids, kiss. Silence when I'm versing and rehearsing. Come out the current, curtain running. Watching them all laugh, how silly I fall. Break down and top it off at all. So they give me a penny for my thought. Let me see what I've brought down and make that frown turn around as I walk on this grounds. I welcome to join you on a path paved, so behaved and tamed. In a game so devilish, you end up enjoying, loving the enjoyment. Out of frightened emotions in motions underneath the layers of lotions, he broke again, put a new replacement in his place. Trust me, I give you laughter because I'm the insider. You'll end up in pieces fighting of what peace is, as my axe is, filled with the blood of innocence. Fragments are left hanging on magnets, quacking and shaking the fridge in the kitchen, yet the explosions roars all over, like meat through the mower. Take a little look closer, for I'm the puppet with a hangover. Overly overdosed on words, yet in the evening I'm face first in the dirt, ripping apart yet another shirt, ready to slaughter a hunter who's paced to kill his prey, silently incognito, bravely as he is though, But here I go rowing up another flow. Aim and shoot if you want to. But I'm not closing in to the end, though. Artificial intelligence blended in with my skeleton. Convinced or not, in my vice you'll end up. Shave your head and lick the top. Oh, is this too far? I won't stop. Get him off stage now. Nope, I won't hesitate. Won't be hesitant. As a gentleman, so gentle then. It's working on my nerves, men. Diverge in search of a murder with a wage then. Staged and caged in a mental trap. Not learning by returning and jabbing. Away in a thick crust of psychological rust. Let alone left behind in a pile of dust. I should quit and ride the wave inside the pit. Shit, this is all I ever did. Riding down an infectious clown. Rap tap tapping in the face of people laughing. Watch them running. When I start clawing in their flesh, I'm just an animal in distress. That's something I really confess. Puppeteer, release me then. I will behave as a gentleman. People wait, this puppet will be gone. Sit down to see the next performer, come on. End poem.
Great read, Emmy. And that's a really kind of weird and twisted piece in a great way. You know, it starts sounding really childish again, you know. Tumpley-dee, tumpley-doo, tumpley-daw, like, it just sounds kind of childish in a way, you know, but you're already kind of keyed off a little bit because, you know, it's called the Devil's Circus, you know, and clowns are kind of a known to be twisted creature anyway. But, you know, it starts off pretty light and bright. You know, you hear that announcer, you know, calling everybody to come and see the show. You know, hear the circus bells ring, ladies and gentlemen, let the show, you know, that I forget the name for the person who does that, but the caller, the person, you know, collecting all the people. And it kind of sets you in this kind of circusy tone, whereas the reader, like, you're the audience being called to watch the show. And then it's like, kids. So, again, you're kind of being put into this place where it's like, oh, this is, you know, directed at children. And it starts out not so bad, you know, silence when I'm bursting and rehearsing, coming out the curtain running. You know, it sounds just like your regular circus show, you know, coming out of the big tent and falling down, being all silly and goofy and entertaining, you know, and being behaved and comedic at the same time. And then to break down, to have this breakdown, you know, and again, we're taken kind of out of this narrative and put back into, like, the people behind the show, the people running the show, being like, uh-oh, the puppet broke again. Meaning this has happened in the past, you know, it's cyclical. This isn't the first breakdown. You know, and then it gets a little more twisted and a little more adult. You know, we're talking about an axe filled with the blood of innocence. Fragments are left hanging on magnets, you know, like, it gets gory in the middle here, you know, just feeling, you know, torn up, you know, it's pretending to give laughter and pretending everything's okay when actually everything is quite not okay, with there being explosions and people's meat going everywhere, and you know, he's just supposed to silently give you jokes and be entertaining, and yet there's all of this nasty stuff happening. And then the announcers again freak out, or like, get him off the stage. And then he goes deeper into this, you know, and starts to bring it all into like a larger message of being like, no, you need to hear this, you know, that it'd be basically enslaved, you know, staged and caged in a mental trap, not learning by returning and jabbing, away in the thick crust of psychological rust left behind in a pile of dust. I should quit and ride the wave inside the pit. Shit, this is all I ever did, riding down an infection clown, rap-tapping in the face of people laughing. You know, tearing yourself apart cyclically, to be entertaining for other people while having, like, repeated mental health crises. And eventually the breakdown is so bad that they just get a new puppet. You know, to me, it's a larger overarching theme of, like, abuses by the system, you know, like grinding people down and lack of mental health care, as well as just, like, a lack of self-care, you know, pushing through these things when it's like, hey, maybe you should actually stop. But anyway, I found it really interesting. Interesting rhythm, a lot of interesting rhymes. I feel like it has a really fast pace to it. And it's, like, grossly, like, grotesquely comical. So I thought it was a great write from Dante 16. Apeziana, do you want to share your thoughts?
Yes. I found it really interesting, the format of it. Like you said, it had the tumpity-dee, tumpity-doo kind of, like, fun at the beginning, and then it gets quite serious. And I liked how he did the kind of ringmaster thing of, like, calling us to pay attention. And then the narration is just from a really interesting perspective. It kind of took me by surprise how much I liked the part where it was, like, he broke again. Like, that section just, like, it took me off guard, and it really, like, catches you to pay attention to the next section and see, like, what happened, like, in what ways is he broken now. And that idea of, like, the sad clown who has to, like, make everyone else laugh when he's struggling, it's really well done here. I liked the part that said, overly overdosed on words. You know, in the poet community, that definitely happens. We're, like, overwhelmed by the words sometimes, or, like, you soak it all in, and it can be very therapeutic, but it can also be triggering. And you kind of get lost in those words. I happen to know, because of other groups that I run, that or help run, that Dante 16 is also a rap battler, and that showed up somewhere in here. He was talking about fighting with your words. I lost the play. Here I go, rowing up another flow, aim and shoot if you want to. I'm not closing the end zone. That part about the rowing up another flow, to me, it felt like it was kind of referencing the way that he fights with words in other senses, too. But the psychological aspects are really interesting. And the whole puppet thing is just really well played out. And the get him off the stage would have been one of my favorite parts, except that he wrote of instead of off. I'm always giving Dante shit for his spelling. So, Dante, edit. I think that this has some really interesting themes. Thank you for sharing, Dante.
Excellent comment.
Emmy, what?
Go ahead. Talking over each other again. Emmy, would you like to add any comments?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just going to say that was, like, kind of a challenging read, especially because there was just moments where, like, what I was reading didn't make sense to my brain. But it was enjoyable, and I think that kind of added to the chaos of the character. Like, it's sort of like malfunction, right? So it would make sense for words to be a little, like, strange or off in a way. Like, that really seemed like a nice touch to me, and I could also vibe, like, pretty well with the actual character itself that just sort of awakened as this sort of uncontrolled entity, like, and was essentially just like, yeah, let's do some fucked up shit tonight, you know, and, like, I was just, like, on board with it the entire way through. So, yeah, it was an enjoyable reading experience for sure, and definitely liked the sort of approach it took and the sort of humanity to it, I guess.
Yeah, there was definitely like the aspect of chaos for sure. You know, something just going wild and wrong in a kind of wicked way. I like what you said about some of the words, like kind of feeling off too, and that adding. Where that stood out to me was like the word devilish, having like the SCH, like that Germanic ending. Like, I don't think there are some of these in here that I think maybe are just typos that need edited, but I don't think that one was an accident. I think it just adds that lisp to it that makes it just a little, like, puts the emphasis on lish, you know, which makes it, I think, feel a little more sinister. So I enjoyed it. Great comment. Where are we off to now, Faziana?
Now we have one by Kingsley Medland. So I am going to read that. Selling the impossible dream. We're all walking down a track or path to find balance between good or bad. It's not about what you want. It's about what you have. You turn on the television or open a magazine. Some asshole's there selling you an impossible dream. You want this and you need that. You can have it all, and that's a fact. Wrong. No, you can't. At all. Because it's exactly that. An impossible dream. It isn't real. It's your money, your time, your very soul that they're trying to steal. Money? You either have it or you don't. You'll never have enough anyway. And time? There's not enough minutes, hours, or days to be chasing the impossible, wasting them away. And your soul? Do you want it left, withered and tainted? Or vibrant, alive, and protected? If you wake up happy with your life, then consider your good fortune. What more do you need if you're missing something than to plant that seed? Don't walk along the path of lies and need. There's little room in life for avarice and greed. Live your own life and follow your own dreams. Who am I to tell you all this? I'm nobody. I'm just me. It took me a long time to see, but as the song goes, I can see clearly now. I spend those precious moments more wisely. It took me a while, but it all changed. When I see my little boy smile. End poem.
Well, great read, Faziana. I love the way that this one starts off as, you know, like selling the impossible dream. And it's true, like you're constantly being pushed to buy things and spend money on things and people selling you on ideas. And making things look glamorous that don't necessarily need to look glamorous. I will say that this piece does feel a little bit preachy, you know, like you should be doing this and not that or that or that. But at the same time, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I've never heard anybody on their deathbed going, you know, I wish I bought a yacht. You know what I mean? It's always like, I wish I'd spent more time with my family. I wish I had more time to do the things that I enjoy. It usually is people related. You know, it's usually about the relationships you have and the gratitude and not about the material things. They're not that important. They really aren't. You know, I grew up very, very poor without a lot of things that most people would consider basic, but I would not say that my childhood was horrible. There were a lot of happy moments, and that's because of time spent with family. It's because of the bonds I have with people, not because of the things I did or didn't have. And I think that's really what this is getting at. You know, it's, you can't really buy happiness, but the good news is you can earn it. You know, you can certainly invest in it as long as you know what it is that actually makes you happy. And it's probably not in a magazine ad. So I did enjoy the write. I enjoyed the concept of the write. It did feel just a touch naggy, but rightfully so. So a great write from Kingsley Medland. Any of your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I was just, I don't know, it's sort of like almost turning it on, like, the decisions I've been making more recently of actually, like, pursuing dreams and shit like that. So it's sort of, like, kind of in agreement with it. It does, I mean, I can understand, like, the comment that it's, like, being kind of just a poem that's sort of giving advice more so than being that. But I do think there's a lot of good, like, detail. I like the some assholes there selling you an impossible dream. It's very, I don't know. I just love it when people swear, I guess. And then the other thing is just, like, I'm nobody, I'm just me. That was also really striking to me. And I don't exactly know. I think it's just, like, this is kind of, I feel like it kind of got the feeling that this was really something that, like, anybody could, like, say, because it just comes with kind of, like life experiences and, you know, whatever time it takes for one to realize what's actually important in life. So, that's about what I had to say.
I think those are great comments. I think the lines that you liked are the lines that I liked as well. And I think the reason I liked those are because they seemed kind of wry. They felt a little more honest than the other lines. You know what I mean? They felt like it's a generally kind of cliche message. But in those lines in particular, it felt more personal. You know, it felt like you got a taste of the author's personality. You know, some assholes there selling you an impossible dream. Like, there's a voice to that. You know, there's a person who's a little bit bitter and pissed off behind those lines. So I'm glad you pointed those lines out, because I felt the same way about those lines. Faisiana, your thoughts?
I agree about those lines. I think it's like kind of like the American dream kind of feeling of, like, you know, you're going to go out there and make a career and get a house and do the thing. And it's like, unfortunately, it's not achievable for all people. I like it's like, wrong. No, you can't. Because, like, oh, God, the housing market right now. But, like, it's just, it has that kind of bitterness that I actually really enjoy, because I think I am too. But yes, I loved the part about, like, some asshole trying to sell you the thing. I liked the attitude of that. But I also loved the end, because I thought that was really sweet, about how it's like, you know, having a child change the perspective. I enjoyed the poem, but I honestly don't see how it has anything to do with my contest. Like, I'm not seeing the connection to the prompt. But I did enjoy it. Now, we're not going to have time for all of them from the other contest, but I do want to try to get at least one in. So the other contest is the secular alternatives to devils and angels on your shoulder. Shoulder dilemmas is what I called the contest. So the idea was you picked some of these animals and had them, instead of an angel or a devil on your shoulder, helping you make decisions or, you know, helping you do them wrong. So the crow tells you to collect shiny things, protect your community, and violently peck at your enemies. The fairy mostly just tells you to do murder. The goblin tells you to collect trash and mind your own business. The raccoon tells you to indulge in delicious food, promotes a cleanly lifestyle, and is a big promoter of petty theft. Dragon tells you to destroy anyone who bothers you and take anything that pleases you. Bigfoot tells you to keep your own personal affairs private and spend more time in nature. Squirrel tells you to run from your problems, but also to always be planning for the future. So those were, people were supposed to pick two of them to have on their shoulders. And the first one here is by Ulo the Dawn. Babbler, would you read this, please?
Absolutely. My chat catches up. All right. This is If I by M.Sai Ulo the Dawn. I could dictate the way I am, but this is just a smaller stand. From keeping to the store of all my time, to mind my ways and do no crime. But inner scene may force to mend that I am protective to them who are of my band. To house them is in the ways so dear, to hold them in the station of the mirror. conclusion of the force in seeing I walk in the garden of my being, and house the things collected in Sphinx, to the way of indicating the war I hold with the thieves that try to steal all to fort. This is my preposition of the momentary ort, location, German, in which I could also be of different kind, in which it is but a statement of my radical established mind that is to force me into this scene in which a crow and Bigfoot is of my healing, knowing what it takes to take my fort till I'm migrated into this red, white, blue ort, see, above. In all real due, I am more of a dragon, because I settle not for the least in the settling meddling, but this is to set me heel. So I preposition of what is of an appeal, to know our ways in which we dear, to home ourselves in which we mirror, come to ways which we hear, weigh, see, contemplate, and have our be, is to know our way. I am in this defense mechanism because of my immigrative stay, and it is heavy pay to write what I say, because it is a healing of the day, if I may. So this is really fascinating. I mean, as usual, Ulu the Dawn writes in a really interesting way, where it's more about the rhythm and striking certain words than it is necessarily about your typical grammatic, you know, structure. But they took the idea of the devils and angels and kind of applied it internally, you know, like going, well, who am I? You know, like, if I had, say, a Bigfoot and a crow on my shoulder kind of advising me about how to run my life, you know, to how to walk in the garden of my being, so to speak, and what things you kind of absorb and how you defend yourself and keep yourself safe, like, you know, who are they? Never mind the advisors. So, you know, with the crow being the one telling you to collect shiny things and protect your community and peck at your enemies, and Bigfoot telling you to just keep yourself private and ignore everybody, they're like, well, you know, while both of those advices have their own pros and cons, I myself am the dragon. The dragon being to destroy anyone who bothers you and take anything that you want. So, you know, that's a bit of a bold personality to admit to, you know, a bit wrathful, I think, but, you know, to then explain why, you know, because they don't settle for anything. That they're like fierce and defensive, that it's a defense mechanism because of things that happened in their past. You know, it's created this kind of vengeance to protect their home and their family. It's an interesting write. It's got some interesting metaphors in it and some really interesting wordplay, you know, and you get the real intensely protective type of person that this would be, you know. And it starts out with, if I could dictate the way I am, meaning they can't really change who they are. If they could change who they are, they might maybe listen to the crow or Bigfoot or whatever, but they can't. So they are dragons, and they are embracing that. So, interesting write. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you, Ulu the Dawn. Emmy, your thoughts?
Yeah. I had something on my mind, and then I just lost it. Okay, hold on. It may not even come back. I think the line that really struck me was the one on the dragon. I am more of a dragon. I think that kind of like that power aspect was reminded me kind of like my own like manic self that tends to kind of emerge when I'm on like 3 hours of sleep, which is usually the cutoff line for like when sleep deprivation goes from just being drowsy to just thinking you can do anything and having extreme confidence, you know? So that was definitely interesting. I thought the poem itself had a very interesting, just kind of like a no fucks given kind of thing. The part of the German immigrant thing was actually something that I was going to touch on because it kind of reminded me of this old German teacher that I remember from elementary school who had this extremely loud voice. And basically he taught German, but he was like the most loud like person I had ever met, I think, up until that point. Like when he spoke, like his voice naturally filled the room. In hindsight, I don't think it was like that healthy for his vocal cords, but like that kind of like powerful presence thing, and just the fact that he happened to be German sort of like seemed to really tie into this in many ways. Not to stereotype in any way, but like that's definitely what it kind of reminded me of. I think the defense mechanism sort of struck me in a way too, just because sometimes it's less a matter of kind of being an aggressive individual and more like baring your teeth as it being a need to kind of like actually keep yourself safe and that kind of confidence, that kind of like relaxed stature can actually go a long way in like keeping one safe or at least making someone feel safe. So yeah.
Excellent comment. I really liked what you said about like the no fucks given aspect of the dragon, because it's also what I got. It felt almost like the first stanza was like trying to care, and then the second stanza was like, yeah, no, I really don't. Like, is kind of what I got from it. So I thought that was an excellent observation. Faziana, your thoughts?
I was surprised, like, how rhythmical it was, because when I first glanced at it and it's in, like, paragraph form, I was expecting it to be more prose. But actually, it had, like, a very metered kind of feel to it, especially, like, listening to you read it out loud. And it had a lot of internal rhymes. And it just, it kind of took me off guard at the way the style shone through hearing it. When at first glance I didn't expect it to. So I was just kind of lost in that rhythm. I thought it was interesting the way that it emphasized certain words too, like things are capitalized and it kind of focuses on, grabs your attention for things. I liked the dragon recognition. It's like, even if you have a crow and a Bigfoot on your shoulders, you yourself might be one of the other ones. So I found that interesting, the idea of like, not only do you have these influences, but you are one of these creatures. I thought that was a nice twist on the prompt.
I like that as well, like as the addition. It's like, okay, so I've got these, you know, little helpers on my shoulder, but that doesn't change my own nature. It's kind of what it said to me. I also really like that. I thought that was a fun twist on the theme. Great Right from M.Sai Ulo, the Dawn. Always an interesting read.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 6 minutes left. What would you like to do, Faziana?
I don't think that's enough to do another poem, so I'll just say that Luke, Daniel, Ghetto Child, Damn It, Dave, we will be reading your poems next week. So we have not forgotten about you for your entries in that contest. I'm sorry that it's bumped to the next week. I just I underestimated how long it would take us to talk about poems, and, you know, we like to just be able to take our time and talk about it, and we want to give your poems full appreciation, so we will continue to talk about that contest next week. And we have a contest from Babbler. Babbler, can you tell us about your contest?
Yeah, I'm running a contest right now about the concept of callous. And callous in two different ways, you know, so obviously they are homophones, but they're not spelled the same. But a callus on your skin is like a rough patch, like a defense mechanism that your body forms to, like, protect you from something that's particularly grating or harmful. And it forms a shield for you and then kind of falls off and goes away when it's no longer needed. And I thought that was kind of an interesting metaphor to take and apply to the idea of, like, a callous personality. You know, because a lot of times being a callous person is similar. You know, I being drawn back to, like, my own youth where I was, you know, very mouthy. I was intimidating. I was kind of off-putting as a teenager because I didn't trust people a lot and I didn't want to get taken advantage of. And I grew up in a rough area. And so I've had this kind of gruff exterior, and I've definitely softened and changed over time as that was no longer needed, you know, as I gained confidence in myself and realized that, you know, I'm not quite that easy to take advantage of anyway. So I was just kind of looking for rights on that kind of overlap, you know, a temporary defense mechanism, something that, you know, maybe a negative characteristic that shows up and fades as it's no longer needed, and ways that a callus can apply to a person and not necessarily a formation of skin, though you're welcome to write on that too. As with all the contests that I run, I'm always welcome and happy to look at unexpected and tangential interpretations of my themes. I find that that helps with creativity and makes it a little bit more interesting, although I do like it if I can figure out how it's related. So, anyway, that's the contest that I'm currently running, so I encourage writes.
I think
no, I'm happy you went with that. Because... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Emmy.
Oh, I think I may enter that, especially because it kind of almost seems like what I write for that might very well be in line with the flower poetry that I've been working on. Like this series is probably going to be more or less memoristic to, like, the early 20s of my life.
All right, great.
But yeah. Like, yeah, I'm just doing a lot of stuff. I was also going to say that I had a poetry contest still up and running, but that's been kind of extended already. It's just the taking inspiration from Instagram poets, sort of like looking at other people's art and taking inspiration from it, which is definitely something I've done as a poet, and I highly encourage everyone else to do that as well.
Yes, I love that. Check out her contest too. All right, we are out of time. So thank you so much, Emmy, for calling in, and also Randy, who called in earlier. And thank you to Phil for doing the work in the background and letting us have this time. And thank you, Babbler, for your wonderful comments and ideas. And thank you to everyone who wrote. If your work is getting carried over, it is not a negative reflection on your poems. It is just that we talk too much or just enough that we are going to expand it for another week. Good night, everyone.
Night, everybody.